It's time for the Packet Pushers Podcast,
where too much networking would never be enough.
A podcast on the data networking industry, routing, switching, design, strategies, daily work life, or whatever we find interesting. Are you ready?
Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real people discuss events, technology and work life in the networking industry. During the week, we gather articles and even sometimes some ideas and then get together to flap our chins about them. Get comfortable while we get around the workbench and diagnose the problems of the network world with humour, wit and maybe even some technical talent. And speaking of talent, our world-class pool of resources are here again this week to do the business. Ethan, how's your week been?
I was at Tech Field Day in Seattle, which people that follow me on Twitter would have known that. I am still trying to hit the reset button from that experience. It was exhausting and absolutely a blast. I think we'll talk about that more a little later in the show.
And I'd like to welcome Brandon Carroll back to the show this week. How are you, Brandon?
I'm doing great. I had a great week and just did projects around the office. And over the weekend here, I did a mud run and I made it away with nothing but a sprained ankle.
What is a mud run?
A mud run is it's either a 5K or a 10K. This is a 5K, and it's got just different obstacles throughout the course. About the last mile has a number of mud pits that you got to run through, and you come out looking all disgusting, but it's a lot of fun.
So is it timed, or do you guys start in a crowd, and whoever wins first wins kind of thing? Or
yeah, it's timed. We did a team. We did an open-sized team. We had about 11 people. And when your team captain has one of the timing chips, and so they give prizes for whoever, you know, finishes first. We were just lucky or happy to finish. So
are there opportunities to for violence where you get to sabotage the other team by hurting them in some way?
Oh, yeah. There's always fun in the mud pit.
It sounds like there should be a certain amount of crash tackling people in the mud pit and rolling around just for fun, surely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think what we should do is we should try and kick off with today's show. It's been a quiet week around the networking industry this week, and to be fair, not a whole lot has been happening outside of the Tech Field Day. There was one article that we wanted to take up this week was, do you abuse your admin privileges? There was a story in the Read-Write Web about something like 70% of all IT pro surveys admit to abusing their admin privileges. Because, you know, of course, I would never, never abuse my privileges. But have you guys ever done it? Sorry?
The article suggests that because you have these deity-like powers as a network administrator, that you could use those privileges to do something nefarious, read your boss's email or access company information that you ought not, spy on people and so on. And would you ever do that? And all these people admitted to having done it in some way or another. And so, like you said, Greg, I mean, of course, here setting an example, we would never ever do or condone such a thing ever.
No. What about you, Brandon? You had any view on this one?
My area is security, so it's kind of I can't say that I necessarily have ever abused it, but I've definitely used my privileges to get stuff done. You know, I don't think I've ever gone outside the realm of anything that would go outside of a corporate security policy. But yeah, I know people do it. Sure.
Sometime in the depths of time, I actually worked at a company that was under takeover, and the people in the IT department had written a keyword search in the email so that whenever certain words appeared, those emails would get forwarded to IT so that they'd know exactly what the status of the discussions were. And I thought that was pretty unethical at the time. But looking back, all they did was keep it to themselves. They didn't actually take that information and do anything with it. So unethical and wrong, but ultimately they didn't abuse the privilege. And I guess that's part of the challenge here, is to understand the difference between what a survey might want to call abusing and what actually doing something with. So abusing admin privileges implies that you've actually done something incorrect or wrong with it. You know, looking in the boss's email to see what he thinks of you might be, you know, relatively harmless when you can tell anyway. But to actually take corporate secrets and sell it to somebody else is probably an entirely different thing.
Well, there's a fine line, though, isn't there? I mean, there's a fine line between what you're doing that's within the realms of your job responsibilities and what is going a step beyond and getting access to things that maybe you shouldn't be going after. I know a guy, a friend of mine, shall we say, who was very curious to know what his coworker, who never managed to get his projects done on time, was doing, and sorted his IP address and just started monitoring all the URLs passing through the firewall sourced from that IP address to see what this guy was looking at on the web all day. Was he looking at meaningful business-related websites, or was he just screwing around? You know, that's the kind of a thing that is right on the edge. Was he asked to do it? No. Does he have access to the information? Yes. Is it plausibly within the scope of his job responsibilities? Plausibly. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. But it's a fine line. It's a fine line.
I know. I mean, one of
a friend of mine.
Yeah. one of my skills is to set up proxy servers, which actually monitor what people serve to the internet. And I've been doing that fairly solidly for about 5 or 6 years now. And one of the things that constantly amazes me is what people will look at when they're at work. I mean, you just don't look at this stuff when you're at what possesses you to go and look at, you know, unsociable websites with material that you really want to keep to the privacy of your own home when they're at work. I don't, you know, it's dreadful what some people look at and seem to, and waste an awful lot of time doing. And of course, the other event that's been happening this week is that Ethan has been attending the Tech Field Day with Gestalt IT in Seattle. So I guess Packet Pushers is, of course, planning to support the upcoming Networking Tech Field Day in September. We spoke about that last week. And I guess we should hear a little bit about what came out of this one. So, Ethan, why don't you kick off some of the topics that you learned and some of the interesting things that we should be blathering about today?
So, Tech Field Day, I think some of you may have heard this on a podcast you did earlier with Stephen Foskett, who's the kind of the energy and motivator behind the Tech Field Day idea. But the idea is get a bunch of guys who are senior engineers, have some years of experience under their belt, are doing a lot of design work and implementation work at a senior level for their companies or as consultants, whatever their roles might be, who are active in social media. They tweet, they blog, and so on, and therefore have a voice that someone out there on the internet is listening to. Put them in a room with companies that are interested in explaining their products and getting feedback from senior people who do this stuff in the trenches all the time. And see what they think. What do you think of our new product? What do you think of this idea? What do you think of our current product set? What could we be doing better? What do you like? What don't you like? Does this seem real to you? Does this seem, to be, good ideas, bad ideas? What have you got? This round was largely storage focused. Storage, of course, converging with networking in a big way. These days, you can't help being a senior person in the networking world without being running into storage running across what was traditionally data, or maybe data and voice. I mean, we've had this discussion before too. Voice is really just data, right? But additional convergence coming in.
Yeah. Networking doesn't live alone. One of the big things is a networking guy doesn't, for all that I joke about servers being packet generators, at the end of the day, I have a very good idea of how VMware works and Windows works, and I know what a mainframe needs from a traffic profile and how it connects to the network. You know, you don't live in isolation. You have to interface, especially if you work in the enterprise, maybe not so much in the service provider world. You don't have to be aware of the operating systems and stuff. And so, you know, getting in amongst of all those other people can be really educational.
And that's very definitely what I got out of, one of many things that I got out of Tech Field Day, but just a reinforcement of something I've been feeling for the last couple of years particularly, which is these guys that are building out applications and that are doing virtualization, whether that's with Hyper-V or VMware, you need to have a real good understanding of what they're doing, and they need to have a real good understanding of networking. They've got virtual switches they're expected to configure. They've got things that are slightly beyond the basics that all of a sudden they need to know. They need to understand VLAN. They need to understand routing. They need to understand .1Q tagging. They need to understand spanning tree, just at a basic level to get a handle on this. And now for some of the more advanced stuff, understanding things like tunneling, encapsulation to carry data between data centers for disaster recovery strategies. All of these concepts are coming out, and it's helpful for the networking guys to know what the storage or virtualization guys are trying to do, and vice versa, because it all works together now. It's all a big system.
It is, and inherently, you know, working together is good for the whole industry. It's not just about working alone. But I guess to pick up on the one topic, I mean, I noticed a couple of blog posts and I saw a number of tweets coming out about F5 was talking about their site-to-site virtualization layer 2 extension technology. Maybe we could pick up on that as a starting point.
This goes back to a packet pusher show we did early on, one of the early ones, where in the release notes they mentioned this, and they presented to the Tech Field Day delegates exactly this technology, whereby you can, just backing up a step, you know, first of all, F5 presented to us an overview of their company and so on, some of which I'll blog about just to get people that aren't too terribly familiar with F5 some better knowledge of what their product set is. But the core of F5's business is load balancing. That's what they do. They've got hardware load balancers that will sit out in front of a pool of servers and then load balance amongst those servers. And if a server on the back end goes away, the F5 is going to know about that. So your user experience will be largely seamless. Gives you the opportunity to do maintenance, recover from error situations, and so on, all automatically. So building on
that
concept.
That to me is the one big difference between, so Cisco's got a technology similar, OTV, which we've talked about in previous shows, which promises layer 2 transparency between physical sites. Now, the F5 layer 2 tunneling technology takes that to the step further, which actually says if I move a system from site A to site B, then the load balancers can actually then redirect the inbound traffic with it as it goes. It's actually superior to OTV in that sense.
And it's done via tight integration with VMware, where what the F5 load balancer has is an API that they expose to third-party tools, if you will, called iControl. So what they've done is, if you're a VMware administrator and you want to move a virtual host, a virtual machine from one ESX cluster to another, you go into your VMware tool, the name of which escapes me because I don't do VMware every day, and you can say, I'm going to move this to this other ESX cluster that's in another data center. And the VMware software will then, using F5's iControl, tell the F5 box, hey, you're going to shut this pool member down on this side, and you're going to bring it up on the other side, on the other data center. And if you could see me, I'm waving my arms to demonstrate how the traffic is flowing from one data center to the other. We really
That's actually the phantom
video.
Whiteboard in action there as your fingers attempt to draw
right.
the
And then the network mechanism that's allowing this to happen is they're making effectively a contiguous layer 2 space using Ether IP tunneling based on the RFC standard for that, the number of which I don't have sitting in front of me right now. So from a VMware perspective, you're not having to really look at the F5 box to make this go. It's all been provisioned for you ahead of time by, you know, an F5 Networks LTM administrator. Who has
so they actually
nailed
integrate
up
with the vConsole, with the console application. So they've got a plugin.
That's right. Yeah, effectively, yeah. That's really what's going on there. VMware sends API calls to the F5 box to down the host you're moving on the one site and bring it up at the other site, and then will actually handle the TCP connections for you. VMware will do that as you bring it down and bring it up was how it was explained to me. So what you end up with then is a client who's still talking to the original LTM, but on the backside of the LTM now they're traversing across to a completely different data center to hit a host that's in that other data center, on that other host, on the other VSX,
So that has opportunities then to integrate with their GSLB, their DNS load balancing product, to actually then flip the inbound load to the remote site?
That's the GTM, the Global Traffic Manager, and that is one of those things where, yeah, absolutely, you could play there, but it's application-specific. I mean, I'm not sure what posts from the roundtable discussions have gone out yet, but one of the questions I brought up is, well, okay, this is really cool, but let's say you're having a data center outage and you want to take that user, that client that's stuck to the front of the LPM, and move him to a different LTM as well. How do you do that? And that was their initial answer, is exactly what you suggested there is, we'll use the GTM, the Global Traffic Manager, which effectively is a big DNS server, change the primary record that's being served up from pointing to that original data center over to the new one.
Yeah.
And that's great for an HTTP application. Not so good for certain applications that may have a long-lived TCP session. Say you're downloading a huge FTP file, something like that. So it's difficult to have TCP.
Yeah, it's very difficult to flip an in-flight. You can't flip an in-flight flow, but you also don't want to have tromboning of traffic. You don't want to have traffic coming into site A, looping over a layer 2 interconnect to site B, then coming back from site B, waving my hands at the imaginary whiteboard, coming back from site B to site A, and then back out the internet connection at site A, or the WAN connection at site A. You want to be able to flip. So if you move a VM from site A to site B, you want the inbound traffic flow to then fly down site B. Or are we too early?
F5's already got I can see in my mind ways that it could be done. I mean, I'm not an F5 engineer, obviously, but just thinking about some of the tools they already have in place, it strikes me that building on some of the concepts they already have, you could do exactly that, where you need to effectively, we do this today with active standby firewall pairs and even F5 high availability pairs. There's a mirroring of the connection table from the primary to the standby unit so that when you flip from you have a failover event, either forced or otherwise, that secondary unit begins to take in traffic that he wasn't seeing before, but he's already got a connection table that tells him this is okay. Well, why not take that idea and do it cross data center so that if you're using host route injection, you could say on the front side, here's my virtual server that I'm advertising out of this data center as a /32. Use connection mirroring to tell the F5 box in the other data center, hey, these are the connection flows I know about and that I want you to pay attention to. You want to flip traffic over to the other data center. Okay, you can vMotion your host over there with the first piece that's already there, and then using host route injection, light it up at the other side, and the connection table mirroring bit would cover that flow as it now gets redirected and comes into the other data center. I mean, that's a lot of traffic we're talking about trying to keep in sync if you were to use it on every single virtual server you might have on an F5, but if you're selective about it, which F5 recommends that you do anyway, I can see that being plausible, something that in theory could be done.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea, and I know that for a lot of, say, where the F5 would be very popular, or where this feature would work is for those who've got web-facing businesses, and that ability to dynamically load VMs in multiple sites transparently and all that is really quite exciting in some ways, provided you've got the interconnect bandwidth. But for those of you who think this is pretty exciting, make sure to wait until you have a look at the bandwidth requirements and work through some of the challenges around that. So I guess I want to move on because time is passing us by. One of the other interesting things that came out, the concept of fiber channel over token ring. Now, I heard lots of chatter about this, and a number of the storage people at the event seemed to get hugely excited about lossless networking and all that sort of stuff. So maybe give us a head up. I mean, to me, it sounds outrageous that they would seriously be talking about using token ring, but it's possible.
Well, I mean, the driver was really about Token Ring in its original inception was targeted at, hey, rather than anybody can talk on the wire anytime they want, let's make everyone take a turn. Here's you've got the token now you can talk. All right, now you apply that to a storage fabric, and now you've got a mechanism whereby you can effectively guarantee lossless state by saying you're the only one that can talk right now. So we know there's not going to be collisions, let's say, or a buffering challenge or these kind of things in a properly designed token ring. So you again apply that to fiber channel and storage, and now you've got a compelling solution there. You're right, it was getting a lot of buzz. There was a lot of,
because even NEC was another vendor, of course, that was there, and Compellent, who also announced some stuff there, and they had some, they were making comments that, it's a possibility,
Compellent acknowledged that they are customer driven, as the market is demanding this, that's something that they would be taking quite seriously. NEC had us in house for a demonstration of their HydraStore disk array, and right there in the demo, someone had tweeted out the photo of their FOC TRV1 implementation.
Yeah.
That went out. And so, there's a lot there. There's a couple of write-ups on the web about the technical implementation, how that would go.
Well, networking people like me are going to think it's ridiculous. Ethernet's a perfectly fine protocol, and just because it's got, suffers a bit of loss from time to time, it doesn't stop anything from working. And, why would you resurrect a I also remember back in the days of Token Ring, it was part of my exam, and I had to install it and work on it. And in fact, where I'm working now, we still have Token Ring. And that proven technology, that's a 20-year-old technology that's proven itself. And, it's a known thing. It's got some great cabling. It's got some great, there's a history there. The knowledge is out there and using it. There's some real strong points going forward for using Fibre Channel over Token Ring, I think.
Yeah, Brandon, did you, I don't know how far back your Cisco knowledge goes, but do you actually recall back in the day that there were definitely 100 megabit chipsets for Token Ring shipping? And and there was even some gigabit over Token Ring, as I understand, that Cisco had put out. I don't know if that's still kicking around anywhere, but do you have a recollection of that?
Yeah, I recall that. I never saw any of the gigabit over Token Ring, but I remember that being huge. 10 years ago, 12 years ago, it was kind of...
Well, they certainly got the 100 meg stuff going, and there was the line cards for the Cat 5000, I think, was the last time. But the gigabit Token Ring standards were definitely developed, and I'm pretty sure they could be dusted off in short order and turned into something ready for use. Maybe we should leave that, because it's pretty early stages for that, and we don't want to pick up on new technologies too heavily. And let's wait and see how many of the other vendors come around and support that one. I think might be the best thing for us.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I wasn't even there, and I could hear the buzz on that. I had posted on Twitter that I wanted to go to the next Tech Field Day, and one Twitter user, Rotos, I think it was, had reposted it and said, "Are you FCOTR certified?" I thought, "What?"
Yeah, Rod's jumping the gun on that. He's Australian and he gets excited, obviously it's too early for certification stuff to even come out, but that just kind of underscores just how much buzz and really people talking about it and thinking about it and so on. And it was a lot of interesting discussion around that for sure.
Packet Pushers is very pleased to announce that we've got our very first sponsor, and that sponsor is Ascolta Training. Ascolta Training is an award-winning Cisco Learning Solutions partner in the United States, which offers an array of advanced Cisco courses addressing multiple technologies. Using authorized Cisco course material and strong customer focus, they provide top-notch training solutions and consistently achieve highest customer satisfaction ratings. Ascolta provides their training using various delivery methods to meet your unique needs across the United States, and in addition to their extensive public class schedule, Ascolta excels at developing and delivering client-specific and customized training to fit your environment. They are partners with Cisco for course development. When you combine that with well-known and industry-experienced instructors, they can deliver public training courses as well as private on-site training that's going to fit your needs. Ascolta has the right solution for you. So now you can reach them on 1-800-297-4294 or find them on the web at www.ascolta.com. That's A-S-C-O-L-T-A. And there's a blog at blog.ascolta.com. They're on Twitter as @Ascolta, which you should follow for technical content and special offers from time to time. When you contact Ascolta for training, mention the Packet Pushers podcast and you'll receive a $250 discount to get you started. So, folks, very pleased to have Ascolta on board and get some sponsorship going. Get out there and support Ascolta Training. They want you to learn something. So on with the next topic in the show. There's an article here published by James Heaney on Network World where he talks about Cisco regaining the top spot in the IPS market. I'm having a bit of a problem this week, again, with Cisco's security strategy coming unstuck. And I know, Brandon, you're focused in the security marketplace. Cisco's punched out some new updates to Security Manager. Cisco, the Mars product has been coming back. They've discontinued the Cisco Security Agent, which is the desktop endpoint security. They're still working on their NAC product, but it hasn't been developing as fast. What do you think about Cisco's security plan? Is it looking coherent to you, or is it just me, being a bit bitter and twisted about the whole thing?
No, I think you're right. I think they're in a position right now where they they have a lot of internal things going on that we kind of haven't seen, you know, come to market yet. They've got a lot of changes that they've made. And so right now it's just a matter of juggling what they still have and what they know they're going to continue to support. And then at the same time, take products that they've got people using, but they know they're no longer going to support. And then trying to figure out how to put that together in a way that it's going to keep the customers, but at the same time, internally, they can do what they got to do to get the new stuff to market. And I think they're just kind of in this really weird place right now with security. It all falls under the borderless networks. And we've talked about that. Nobody really knows what borderless networks is or what that encompasses. And so it's just a real weird place for them right now.
Now, I've been trying to find someone at Cisco who's into borderless networks. He'll come on the show and talk to us about it. But as yet, I don't have any names, and I haven't had anybody from Cisco reach out to me to explain that. But I know borderless networks includes not only security, but, you know, switching and routers and, you know, anything that doesn't seem to be attached to the data center somehow seems to fit into the lump. And I guess Cisco is focusing a lot on the recent, you know, data center around the UCS strategy, and they want to have that single. They're doing a bit of an Apple there and, you know, focusing down on one product from the portfolio and pushing that so the message doesn't get mixed up. So maybe security looks a bit lost because of that, but, you know, yeah.
And you got to follow the dollars. Where's the money at right now?
Well, I can't see how security doesn't matter. Security is absolutely vital. Is it just because we're so tired of fighting the war and losing that we're giving up?
I think it's just security's there. It's not going to leave. It's not. I think everybody's kind of settled on the fact that you're going to have security. There's a need for it, but there's other technologies that I think they can get more money out of it at the moment. That's a little more popular, and you know, just kind of like I said, follow. Well, that's what Apple does, right? So I mean, they're. How much marketing are they doing on the iPad right now versus the iPhone 4?
Yeah.
So go with what's new and what you can sell more of right now.
It makes a better message, too, if you're only target marketing on one front. That doesn't mean that the other divisions aren't doing things. It just maybe the perception's not – my perception of the security is that it's just, you know, in the corner over there sucking its thumb and not really getting on with stuff. Yeah. So – yeah.
Well, they've got – yeah, but even so – okay, so they're not pushing the edge on technology or cohesion or integrating the product sets very well, but yet they've got incredible market share, and maybe that's why. They're not losing market particularly with their different security products that I know of. I mean, I was actually surprised to hear that they're now at the top of the pile in the IPS market, because their IPS have always been regarded as – oh, yeah, and Cisco has an IPS too, but we don't really care about that because it doesn't do that much. And now they're, you know, commanding some leadership. Maybe they're just resting on, hey, we're Cisco, we're big, and people buy our stuff because they'd rather have it, say, Cisco on the front, and we keep selling product. Why put so much more energy and so on into development? I feel that way with Cisco sometimes.
Yeah. Like, you know, like I said, they're on so many fronts. And not only are they into enterprise networking, of course, they've got service provider strategies and flip, you know, and toys. They make toys as well. So maybe it's hard to keep everything going, keep all the balls in the air at any given point in time. All right, then. We're going to have a short show this week because we're missing Dan, and we wanted to hold over the careers discussion until Dan gets back on the show, because I think there's a lot more in that. And we also know that we still haven't covered off on some of the previous topics, such as DDoS, where there's still more to talk about on those. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up, Ethan?
The only thing I wanted to mention is that for the folks that have a little bit more interest in FCOTR, there is an FCOTR.org site you can go up, and that's a pretty good jumping off point. FCOTR.org, have a read through some of the links that are there, and there's a draft specification and so on if you're into that kind of detail.
Brandon, you got anything you want to throw at us for the week?
No, that's about it for me. I'm going to nurse the sprained ankle and read up on FCOTR.
Excellent.
I can't believe that's actually going anywhere, but there you go. So that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again in a week or so. Make sure you come back. I'd like to thank our external resources for joining us this week. Brandon, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Carroll. You can also find me on my blog at globalconfig.net. Of course, my company, Ascolta.
That's good. And also just to point out that Ascolta is sponsoring Packet Pushers. And if you do go up and book some training, make sure you mention us and they'll give you $250 off and they'll also know who the hell sent them to you. Ethan, what's up with you this week?
I will be back at work instead of being up all night and all day in Seattle at Tech Field Day. So I got routers that better be on my desk when I get back because the G703 card showed up. So I better have the 2911s to put them in so I can ship them off to Europe. I'll be building those. I got a 4507E-R I got to build and on and on the list goes of good, cool stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at EC Banks and my blog is packetattack.wordpress.com.
Well, and I'm praying for some lab time this week because I've got a half a dozen 6509s that I've got to do some EOMPLS configuration on, which I'm absolutely itching. You feel those little fingers there? They're absolutely waiting to get going with that. But that's a whole other thing. So I'm Greg Farrow, and you can find me at etherealmind.com or on Twitter at etherealmind. Etherealmind.com, of course, is running a petition around iOS for those of you who want to support iOS educational licensing. And at the time of recording, we have over 1,000 confirmed signatures. Nearly 1,200 total people have signed up, but only 1,000 have actually confirmed that with their email address to say they're legitimate people. I'm pretty pleased about that, and I'm going to have to start planning this week about how we take that forward to Cisco to make our voices heard. Please stay tuned for that. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send us an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what the hell you are thinking. Alternatively, you can check us out at the podcast website at packetpushers.net, leave a comment on today's show, or follow us on Twitter at @packetpushers. And remember, too much networking would never be enough. Thank you.